The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Very good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawkbox. Your headlines this hour. U.S. stocks rebound, the Dow hitting a new record on the back of strong earnings, while tech tumbles as Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Richard Clarida tells CNBC it is still too early to talk about tapering.
I think what the data is telling us now is there's going to be some upward movement as we reopen, but that it won't persist over a long period of time.
The White House has backed a waiver of intellectual property rights on COVID-19 vaccines, reversing its original position and setting up a big battle with Big Pharma.
Beijing suspends all activities under the China-Australian Strategic Economic Dialogue, criticising what it calls a Cold War mindset in Canberra. SocGen swings back into the black in the first quarter as the French bank's global markets business sees its highest activity in 4 years. The CFO joins us in half an hour's time.
And it's decision time at the Bank of England with taper talk in focus. We'll break the details live at 1 CET and then bring you a special interview with Governor Andrew Bailey at 5 p.m. Central European time. So, very good morning, everybody. I'm just going to dive into some numbers for you before we move on. I'm having a look for the UniCredit numbers. It'd be helpful if I could spell it properly, actually. So, let's have a look here. First quarter group results. Well, the messaging from UniCredit, excellent fees and seasonally low cost of risk underpin strong profitability. The underlying profit coming in at 0.9 billion euros, thanks to a rebound in revenues, as I say, and the low cost of risk here. The bank is writing back 15 basis points on the stated cost of risk. Let's plow down. The CET1 ratio in at 15.92%. Clearly no problem with capital levels. In terms of the guidance, full year 21 revenues are broadly in line with the consensus and expected to be in line with 2019 levels. Underlying net profit expected broadly in line with previous guidance. For the first quarter of this year, the group delivered revenues of 4.7 billion euros, boosted by a rebound in trading income and record fees. And I think that's characteristic of what we've seen from a lot of these banks, actually, that they've enjoyed an uptick in capital market activity. And we've also seen an uptick in business activity, which has supported that fee income. The group says the continued focus on cost efficiency and the strong cost discipline will result in significant operating leverage in the first quarter of 2021, leading to the lowest cost income ratio in more than a decade at 51.5%. And that is an attractive number. We've seen a lot of the banks reporting recently with a number in excess of 60%. So encouraging moves on the cost side. The shareholders will like that. They'll like the revenue line. Of course, the big question, and very good morning to you, Karen, for the financials, is just whether these positive trends around the capital markets can continue, because we have seen one or two banks, and I think Barclays was one of them, starting to indicate that maybe the FIC revenue line is starting to weaken as we approach the full meat of the second quarter.
It's a trade-off, isn't it? Good and bad on comparables when it comes to the trading portfolio. But the company pointing out it's waiting for the better economic recovery to play out to help out NII. So two parts of the business there, but also transition in the sense of new management as Andrea Orcel takes charge. I think the markets are very much looking forward to any M&A that may take place, which could be the next wave, but certainly an important update as you consider the future of the business. And let's push forward to SocGen, which has been reporting in the last hour or so. It swung to a profit of 814 million euros in the first quarter, bouncing back from a net loss a year earlier as the French lender's global markets business posted its strongest performance since 2017. The company's equity and fixed income trading units both saw revenues increase, while risk costs fell by more than 66%. And coming up a little bit later on, we'll be speaking to the SocGen Deputy General Manager and CFO. That's coming up at 7.30 CET.
So in at €1 billion on the net line for ING, which is a decent uptick on where we were on the fourth quarter, where they delivered €727 million. The result before tax, then 1.463 million. The capital position strong at 15.5%. Let's get out to the CFO of the business, Tanate Phutrakul, joins us. He is the CFO of ING. Thank you for joining us. Can I just start off by asking you to put some colour on the quarter for us? Clearly, strong capital position here and a decent uplift on the quarter-on-quarter net line.
Thank you very much. Very nice to be on your show. I think we have seen is quite broad-based rebound of our revenue, both in retail and wholesale banking, with strong fee growth. Our cost efficiency programs are tracking well with quarter-on-quarter reduction in terms of our cost evolution, and also quite benign economic situation with our risk costs coming in below our through-the-cycle average. So very, very strong quarter, very broad-based, and it shows a clear sign of exit from the current COVID situation for us.
And a positive line on the NIMS here about the support and the benefit from the TLTRO program, but clearly there is continued margin pressure from the fact that we have negative interest rates in the Eurozone whilst you're trying to make a decent net interest line. Do you expect that trend to continue through the rest of the quarter and most of 2021?
We do. I mean, despite the uptick in the yield curve, negative interest rates still weighs on most European banks, including ING. And we are, of course, taking steps in terms of fee generation, in terms of, in some instances, charging negative rates to our customer base. But most importantly, looking forward to continued loan growth in across the world to basically compensate for that compression in terms of liability income.
Donato, I saw an announcement to that tune from Belgium, ING Belgium, where you were talking about charging customers with a balance of more than 250,000 euros on those savings. They will now pay a fee. What's the trade-off here? Will some of those customers park the money elsewhere?
Yes, it's also you know, something that we have to do, but I would stress that the number of customers affected by this new charging is limited. Over 90%+ of our customers still don't get charged negative rates, but there's a trade-off and there's a competitive, of course, comparison with other banks in Belgium as well. And we do that in other parts of our European market. So it's something that I think the market is having to adjust to given the long-term negative interest rate in this environment.
I understand the pressures you're facing when it comes to margins and trying to shore up the business, but do decisions like this fuel money and send money back into the markets where investors can chase much healthier returns?
Yeah, I think one of the key roles that we play is not really to just ask for these negative rates to our customer, but give them choices. And in for certain customer segment, we do encourage them to look at potential investment in investment funds as an alternative to bank savings. And that's what you see increasing within ING as well, where we now have over 170 billion of asset under management from our customer who are transitioning from deposits partly into investment funds.
And give us a line, if you could, on the trend you expect on loan impairment. I think what's been interesting through this quarter is we've seen a lot of the banks writing back the provisions that they'd made because the loans just haven't soured in the way that they expected. What is your plan in terms of provisioning and expectation around loan impairment?
Yeah, we remain prudent. We have decided not to write back any loan loss provisioning this quarter because we do still expect that credit losses would come when government programs are basically taken away. So we have kept, in fact, we added slightly to our loan loss provisioning this quarter. But our guidance is that we expect loan losses this year to be lower than what we had in 2020.
Tanata, thanks for joining us. We'll see you on the next quarter, if not before. Tanata Futrakul, the CFO of ING.
And taking just on the market action, we're seeing dual themes across some of these markets. Commodities certainly in focus as we've witnessed another bounce in the copper price and elsewhere. That's a supportive factor. But if you look at the Australian market, a greater tension to play, and that is a suspension of dialogue with China, which is impacting the stock market. As you can see, a reversal, 0.7 down. China and Japan returning after a fairly long break, and it is a modest dip for Chinese stocks currently. Hong Kong bouncing about 0.33% in a very strong trade for the Japanese stock market, escalating nearly 480 plus points, or 1.7%. So a strong trade playing out there. And let's take a look at the US markets as we saw the fresh record on the Dow by the close of the session, 34,230. The markets, though, are seeing a little bit of an impact around technology, and this after comments from Janet Yellen about whether interest rates may need to go up. Those warning shots sent by the Treasury Secretary. Also concerns around what may happen with some of the big pharmaceutical companies that are positioned around COVID-19 vaccines, given the President Joe Biden has thrown his support behind wavering intellectual property rights. So let's just move on to what we're seeing from the technology names. As you can see, the NASDAQ pulling back and the concerns that I mentioned from Janet Yellen, that sent some selling into this sector. Microsoft to Netflix, Facebook down 1%. Tesla reversing, and you can see Amazon down 1.2%. The big tech stocks, take a look at how they're playing out versus what we saw in the pharmaceutical sector. Pharma stocks also down heavily, 6.1%, fairly sizable. The slump there, BioNTech, and don't forget Pfizer, BioNTech, right at the front of this vaccine fight. Novavax down 4.9%. And taking a look at some of the big pharma stocks too in China, where there has been some opposition to this wavering of our IP, 20-odd% down for some of the big names, a huge fall there. Sinopharm, one of the ones that investors are very familiar with, that is down 8.9%. And a look at how treasuries are shaping up at this point. I mentioned the cyclical favor in the markets around the commodity story, but that is a little bit of a nod to potential inflation down the track. 1.58 is where we're sitting on the 10-year. Currently still well off those highs we saw back in March, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks very much. And Karen, you mentioned the comments from Janet Yellen there, and we talked about how she walked back those remarks. But it's interesting how the PR offensive now has been stepped up with Richard Clarida stepping in effectively. Nothing to see here. Just forget what Janet Yellen had to say. The Fed vice chair has defended the central bank's ultra-loose monetary policy, saying that it will help bolster the fastest recovery since the 1980s. Speaking to CNBC, Clarida said he would like to see more improvement in the labor market first.
We're still a long way away from our goals, and in our new framework, we want to see actual progress, not just forecast progress. So as we move through the year, we'll get more data. We'll get an employment report on Friday. And as we go through the year and we assess that data, we'll be able to make a judgment about substantial progress. But we're certainly not there yet.
Here in the UK, the Bank of England is expected to keep interest rates near a record low when it delivers its latest decision today. Investors will be keenly watching for any update from the MPC on when it may think about tapering its asset purchase program. The bank will also publish its quarterly monetary policy report with GDP forecasts set to be revised upwards. And I think we get some services PMI out a little bit later, which may help frame the decision when it comes. Jemana and Juliana will bring you the decision as it breaks later today from 12:55 Central European Time. And clearly, Mr. Bailey has a lot to say today. He is talking to reporters. We will have our own conversation, or at least Jemana will speak with the Bank of England governor later. The interview will be played out at 1700 Central European time.
And Steve is out on an OB, I believe.
Well, at this very moment, he could be chuffing his way up to Scotland.
Yeah.
I think.
It's exciting when the outside broadcast
these days. I thought he might take the car, but
I think
he's going to get the train.
It's about a 7-hour drive, isn't it, from
London?
Oh,
at least, yeah. Depending on what the traffic is like when you go around that bit of the M6. It's always quite painful just past Liverpool.
Right.
Yeah, it can be quite congested.
Well, let's walk you through the latest as alongside today's local elections across the UK. Voters in Scotland will head to the polls to elect a new parliament at Holyrood. The latest Sky News poll shows the Scottish National Party on course to win a slim majority. An SNP victory could see Edinburgh ramp up efforts for a new independence referendum, something Boris Johnson and his government in Westminster has sought to squash. Now, meantime, well, we will be bringing you more on this, of course, over the next 48 hours or so. The US backs plans to suspend the patent rights of COVID vaccines, sending shares in the likes of Moderna and BioNTech lower. We'll discuss that next. Plus, for a look at today's biggest earnings, including that first on interview with the CFO of ING, check out the Squawk Box podcast.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
The best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
Some numbers crossing from Air France KLM for the first quarter, and no sign of any improvement yet for the airline. They're still waiting to see the first effects of vaccination. That, according to the CFO, for the moment they continue to see late booking behaviour by customers. A Q1 revenue down 57% to €2.16 billion. The EBITDA loss at €627 million. The company's operating loss has widened to €840 million. And the company, though, saying at the net loss line, that has narrowed to €1.481 billion from €1.8 billion a year earlier, which was the loss. So ongoing lockdowns likely to mean difficult start to the second quarter. They expect capacity at 50% of the pre-crisis levels in the second quarter, 55 to 65% of capacity in the third quarter. So not much of a step up by then. Further capital and hybrid capital increases under consideration. So this is the key as we talk about the pain to the sector and just whether further support is required at this stage. They say the 2021 CapEx seen below €2 billion, with fleet investments largely financed, expects around €500 million of restructuring cash out in 2021. So it is still a tale of woe for this particular airline.
India has reported a record number of new daily COVID-19 cases in excess of 412,000. Virus-related deaths also rose by a record 3,980. Meanwhile, the US State Department has approved the departure of non-emergency government workers from India amid the surge. Criticism of Prime Minister Narendra Modi's handling of the pandemic continues to mount after the country accounted for nearly half of worldwide COVID-19 cases last week. Shares of Moderna moved higher in extended trade as it reported a promising response from its COVID vaccine against the South African and the Brazilian variants. The pharma giant is testing a 50 microgram dose of the vaccine in those who have previously received the jab. The early data found the booster shot increased antibodies against the two variants, as well as the original strain of the virus. Shares in several coronavirus vaccine producers, including Moderna and BioNTech, closed Wednesday's session deep in the red. This after the Biden administration said it would support waiving patent rights for vaccines. That decision would open the door to other countries to produce copycat vaccines. This has always been an interesting debate, I think, about whether the pharmaceutical companies should acknowledge this as a global emergency and acknowledge there are parts of the world which will find it difficult to vaccinate their people because of the cost, and whether they should then set aside the profit motive. Up to this point, of course, it hasn't been the case, and we've seen different businesses. AstraZeneca's gone in one direction, Pfizer-BioNTech's gone in another direction. But this is quite an important decision, I think, if the White House does ultimately confirm that it will enforce some abeyance of patent restrictions.
It does throw the vaccine nationalism story in a spin, doesn't it? And I think you're right to call it a debate. You can argue it from both sides. I mean, there's much good and bad in the debate when it comes to President Biden throwing his support behind this waiver. It was his call in the lead up to the election. Don't forget, he wins in favor internationally. He's seeking more multilateralism. This gives him a very strong platform to try and reconnect with other countries on many different issues beyond vaccines, but also wins in favour at home with the left. So there are political elements here to this story. In terms of the challenge that we're facing around COVID, it is a world challenge. It's not a problem just for the United States. And if you look at the situation playing out in India, it is India today, it could be another country next. And if there isn't a world initiative to try and solve the problem around COVID-19, it is still also a problem for the United States when it comes to world growth. So there is an argument for ensuring this waiver applies because you've got more vaccines distributed globally. The other point is when it comes to these vaccine makers, they will make profits down the track on some of the follow-up shots. And we keep hearing about boosters for many years to come. They have thought that they would still make profits on that despite any waiver. The other point to the other side of the story, though, is that there is concern that if you're not properly funding the research and development that's gone into these very rapid vaccine developments, then you're not going to have the right funding in terms of rolling out production sites globally. So you may compromise the process by not having the right funding in place.
Yeah, I mean, it does on the face of it seem cruel and bizarre that here we have a country that actually built a pharmaceutical industry that supports production for the rest of the world in India, based largely on the generics trade. And they developed an industry on the back of medicines that had gone off of patent largely. And then, of course, there's been development since then. But we're in a very strange place where, as a result, I think, of a lot of government policy decisions, we now have this terrible tragedy unfolding in a country that has an industry that could respond more aggressively if it were allowed to produce a lot of the vaccines off patent.
Yeah, that's right. And we've seen all the various decisions around whether some of the vaccines should stay domestically in India to try and inoculate the population and avoid any further escalation in the death toll and COVID cases. But I think it's, you know, India today, as I say, but it could be another country another day. And does the United States want to be seen to be standing by while a situation like this plays out as their own population has seen a very rapid vaccination program? And I think it's very hard to argue the case for a more connected world and to have other countries signing up to initiatives like climate change, for instance, when you don't have the support that you're providing through COVID vaccines. So I think this is a really important initiative for Joe Biden and one way he can win favor globally.
There are other ways that you could do this, of course. When you look at historically things like the power generating industry, there have been profit control systems in place to say, OK, because this is a life essential, you can make a decent return, say up to 10%, but not more than that. And there possibly is an argument here for saying that the pharmaceutical companies should be rewarded for the R&D expenses that they've incurred here, and the fact that they've concentrated on this and suspended perhaps the work on other profitable drug programs while they've focused on this particular vaccine. The question is, they do look a little bit messy to implement on a country by country basis. Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to cnbc.com.
Or join us again on the show with Jeff Cutmore, Steve Sedgwick and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.